Welcome to the Data Life podcast. In this podcast, we talk about real life experiences with data, personalities, tools, and more. Happy New Year 2020, and hope you have a wonderful year ahead. Before we begin, I want to say welcome to all the listeners from around the world, including countries like US, Germany, UK, South Korea, India, and Brazil. Thanks for your support. Please continue to share this podcast with your friends and coworkers. Today, we're going to talk about why the two libraries, scikit-learn and Keras, are great for machine learning. These libraries, combined with pandas in Python, form the three core libraries for a data scientist in 2020. I have talked about pandas in a previous episode as well, so you can check that out. Also, I'm not going to be talking about a theory of machine learning and neural networks themselves. This episode will talk more about how these libraries play a crucial role in building the model pipelines. So welcome, and let's get started. A typical workflow of a machine learning project involves data exploration, data cleaning, data transformation, and pattern fitting the data to a model. For the first two steps of data exploration and data cleaning, Pandas is an amazing library. Pandas comes with read CSV function as well as functions like read JSON, read SQL, and so on that allow you to quickly read the data, remove the duplicates, and remove any missing values. You can also do a quick group bys to aggregate the data. You can also run histograms to see the data distribution. And if you're dealing with time series data, you can do line plots and stuff like that. Ideally, I prefer using Jupyter notebooks for this step because they allow you to quickly see the outputs of each individual block of code very quickly. Rest of the cells and variables remain in the RAM, so you do not need to execute them again and again. Also, if you're running a Jupyter notebook in a cloud like AWS EC2 instance, you can leave that server on, and as long as that server remains on, you can revisit your notebook like even a month later and all your variables are still loaded. So you don't need to continuously rerun the file again and again. And I think that's like one of the main advantages of using Jupyter notebooks. You can also just only focus on one or two lines of code as you iteratively build on solutions. This is especially great for large files where loading and cleaning time of data might be large. You can quickly visualize data frames as well. So you can just do df.head to see the top 5 rows of data frame and iterate very quickly. Having explored and cleaned the data using pandas in a Jupyter notebook, you might have a pretty good data set to start trying to fit a machine learning model on. You can just copy the code to a Python script or save the cleaned dataset in a CSV that you can read for ML models. So again, to summarize, you use Jupyter Notebook to progressively iterate and clean up the data, explore the data, and so on. Then you can copy the most essential cells from the notebook into a script. Or if you don't want to do that, you can just save the clean dataset in a CSV that you can directly again load into a Python script and just move on to the next step without doing the whole like exploration bit. So your data exploration and data cleaning steps are complete. Well done. Now you can continue to use data frames for the next step, or you can choose to use pure Python. It's up to you. So the next step is more about now building up the entire ML pipeline, and scikit-learn comes in next for data transformation. So we need to do one more step before we actually start building a model, and that is data transformation. So one of the main things that you do in data transformation is splitting the data into train and test data sets. I mean, that's something that you would typically do for supervised learning models, and scikit-learn provides a very good way to split the data for you. It can even randomize the data for you and can split the data by taking a fixed percentage from each class label. This can be accessed by the stratify property. So if you do stratify equal to true, your scikit-learn model will pick a fixed percentage from each class label. So if you had like 5 class labels, it would pick like 20% from each one of them to build the entire 20% data set, instead of just choosing 20% randomly in the data set. And you might have like one class like completely missing in the test data set. So you don't want to do that, right? So other than test and this train test split, scikit-learn provides really good scalar functions out of the box. So things like min-max scalar and standard scalar are available for you to scale the data and make them more in similar range or similar order of magnitude. So if you have someone's household income in one column and credit score in another, there is going to be an order of difference between the two, right? So your credit scores might be in the range of like 5, 6, 700 or 800, and the household income is going to be like $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 to up to $100,000, $200,000. So it's like, it's going to be a difference of order of magnitude. So min-max scalar would scale both columns to numbers between 0 and 1, which makes it easier for machine learning models to learn and perform. If you have big outliers, then standard scalar is better than min-max scalar, as it scales the values to their z score and technically can be, say, between minus 3 and 3. If you use min-max scalar with large outliers, then your main input data can get squeezed into very less values. So, I mean, that's kind of like a separate discussion, but I just wanted to bring that up. But the main point being that there is a train test split options available, and there is also things like scalars which are available for you to little bit like clean up the data and like scale it. And for the next step, which is if you want to like perform principal component analysis, you might need to definitely scale the data before you do that. So principal component analysis would allow you to compress the data into dimensions that explain most of the data. So if you have like large number of features, this step can be really important and it can help you to prevent overfitting in the machine learning step. So principal component analysis comes out of the box in scikit-learn, which is pretty awesome. And initially I was a little overwhelmed to even try out PCA from scikit-learn, but actually once I used it, I found it to be very approachable. You can use a scree plot to see how many principal components explain the most amount of variance. So you could use like 3 or 5 or 7 principal components, depending on how many of them are needed to explain, say, 95% of the variance of the data. If your data set is like really large, you might run into problems with using the default PCA. So scikit-learn provides different kinds of options like incremental PCA, which learns the principal components in batches. Also, if your data is like highly nonlinear and there is not a very high amount of linear correlation between the features, you might want to try out kernel PCA, which uses a kernel trick to try to understand kind of like the nonlinear properties of the data set. I will link to a book by Aurélien Guéron, which talks in depth about these different kinds of PCAs, which I think I found very helpful. It is a great book overall, so I mean, it's highly recommended anyways. So we have covered 3 main functionalities of scikit-learn, including train test split, scaling, and PCA. But scikit-learn actually provides you with great tools for pre-processing and transformation of data, even though you might not use its machine learning capabilities. It has a fantastic API which exposes you to the most common functionality by the fit, transform, and predict methods. You can combine the first two by just simply writing model.fit_transform, which would do both of these steps. But if you want to save the model or the scalar or the PCA for later use, you would need to save it after the fit step. So you would just fit the model and then just save it in either a pickle file or a joblib file. And then you could just load it when you want to transform the test data or real life input data. So that's like kind of the main key takeaway here, is that for the training data, you would do fit transform. For the test data, you would load up the pickle file that you had saved after the fit method for training data and just only run transform. And then once you have done that, you could use predict methods if you were using, say, things like machine learning models and so on. If you do not want to use the machine learning capabilities of scikit-learn, then you can stop here. But if you want to use its machine learning model capabilities, scikit-learn has a great selection of models like decision tree, random forest, logistic regression, naive bias, and linear regressor. For hyperparameter tuning, you can use scikit-learn's grid search CV to select the best hyperparameter, you know, like things like number of trees or tree depth in random forest. So you don't need to like keep trying or different options manually. You can just like kind of leave it on and it would find the one best for you. It is really, really useful. What is actually overall awesome about scikit-learn is that it provides a very clean API, as I mentioned, using the fit, transform and predict methods. It accepts NumPy arrays, Python lists or data frames as inputs. And it also provides very good baseline numbers for the different hyperparameters and arguments. So you can just get started very quickly. This makes this library quite approachable to get started in. Because of how approachable it is to get set up and running, it might be better to just get started here and get the baseline metrics before trying the different kinds of like neural networks and so on and so forth. So it might be a good idea to get the baseline metrics first. So after a short break, we'll be right back with using Keras and neural networks. So I'll see you then. Welcome back. So far, we have covered data exploration, data cleaning, and data transformation using pandas and scikit-learn. Now, if the baseline metrics are good enough and you're happy with the shallow models such as random forest or logistic regression, you can stop here. But you might be curious as to how the neural network might perform better than the shallow model that you have trained. The reason that neural network could perform better is because neural networks are great at learning nonlinear and complex relationships in data. In a neural network with several hidden layers, it can progressively learn features from low level to high level, like initial layers learning to detect edges and curves, and later layers learning to detect faces. And I think that's what kind of makes neural networks really powerful. They mimic the brain and they're able to kind of learn very complex relationships of data. Also, if you remember, even for doing dimensionality reduction, I had mentioned PCA in section one, which is actually pretty great for dimensionality reduction. In fact, autoencoders is the neural network version of PCA. So PCA does like kind of linear relationships between the data and does linear correlations and finds the principal components. But autoencoders are able to do nonlinear correlations between the data. So if you suspect that the data has low linear correlation but has high nonlinear correlation, then neural network based autoencoders can be very useful. But you might not want to spend a lot of time setting up the entire computation graphs for neural networks. Here is where Keras really shines through. Keras is now officially part of TensorFlow, so you can be sure that it will have support by the Google team going forward. Keras provides two different ways to build the neural networks. One is sequential API, which is great for beginners and for quickly setting up neural networks. You can just add hidden layers with model.add. So basically like model would be equal to sequential and then you'll progressively add to this by doing model.add. And you can use dense layers for connecting a set of neurons or you could also use more advanced layers such as LSTM or CNN and bidirectional LSTM and so on and so forth. Now all of these kind of come out of the box. You can just invoke them by importing them. The second approach that Keras uses is to use functional API, which gives you more control of how the data flows from input to output. So if you want to have neural network that has three different labels instead of just one label, then functional API would allow you to share the initial layers and then just train the last layer separately for each of the three different labels. Now, sequential API it won't be very easy to kind of hook this up because it's very custom. So functional API will make it really easy for you to do it. if you're building a very kind of like vanilla neural network, then I would recommend you to use sequential API because it's just easy to get started with, and you don't get anything more by going to functional API. But if you want to like really control how the data is flowing and make changes to the process of the data and so on, or if you want to like say do deep stacked LSTMs and so on, then you might want to like use functional API to do that. So I feel that the combination of sequential and functional APIs makes Keras really powerful, and it is a great tool to prototype neural networks without going deep into the nuts and bolts of building the networks. In fact, for vanilla neural networks where you do not need a lot of customization, sequential API is the best way to start. And the basic workflow of Keras would be to like just build and write the model and then compile it, followed by fit. And finally, you would have predict to get the predictions. This is very similar to scikit-learn API, and I really love how clean this pipeline is. So if you remember, the scikit-learn API is like fit, transform, and predict. And here again, you're doing like compile, fit, and predict, which is pretty cool. Also, there is model.summary, which provides a nice summary of all the parameters and the number of parameters that the network needs to train. So it's like a really nice summary. Keras provides a really nice way to visualize the data using the history attribute. You can easily plot the progression of how your model loss has changed over the number of iterations. Keras also has great collection of callbacks. Two of the best are reduce LR on plateau that you can use to progressively reduce learning rate as you reach the minima. Another one is model checkpoint. So that's the one that you can use to save the best model so far as you try like different epochs. So what is really nice about this is that you don't need to like take a pen and paper and write like which epoch has been the best one and so on. It will just automatically save the best epoch that it has found, and then you can like just run it for like say a default of 100, and it would stop the model at 72 or 84 or whatever, and it would like just save it at that point. Keras makes it easy to use multi-class output where you can use sparse categorical cross entropy as a loss instead of converting your categorical variables to one-hot vectors. Another great function is predict classes, which just gives you the output of a fitted model. So you don't need to like manage those NumPy arrays and find like the which one has the best and the highest value and so on. Predict classes would like directly give you 0 or 1 or 2, you know, based on an output of a classifier. You can save the models in H5 files using Keras. You can also save them in .pb files or protobuf files, which are really great for deployment purposes. So you can deploy them on a Google Cloud platform and another place like that. And pb files are like really good for that. If your model files are too big, you can just save the weights and just recreate the model on the fly. Overall, Pandas, scikit-learn, and Keras are amazing libraries to not only get started with, but also build production systems in the area of machine learning. As Keras has slowly gone from a standalone library to now being part of TensorFlow, it can get a little messy to change and figure out all the import statements and stuff like that. But I do know that with TensorFlow 2 that came out last year, the team is encouraging everyone to not use Keras standalone, but rather use the TensorFlow implementation of Keras. I feel that this might be the smart way to go forward. Also, now Google will provide first-hand support to TensorFlow, which already has integrated Keras into it, so which is pretty awesome. Anyways, this brings us to the end of this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. If you like episodes like these, please leave me a voice message on anchor.fm or drop me an email at thedatalifepodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn when you search for Sanket Gupta. Please like, share, and subscribe to this podcast, and also leave a review. It will be highly appreciated. Thank you for listening, and as always, have a great week ahead.